The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Half-baked and unfair, can a truce be hammered out in the turf wars? Housing havoc, vacant convents and hospitals to be pressed into use for Ukrainian refugees. And who's running the country? Row over Tony Houlihan appointment rages on. We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. And joining us in studio to debate all of that tonight, we have James O'Connor, Fianna Fáil TD for Cork East and party spokesperson on transport, Sorica Clark, Sinn Féin TD for Longford West Meath and party spokesperson on defence, and Michael Fitzmaurice, independent TD for Roscommon Galway. And joining us from our other studio, we have Christina Finn, political correspondent with thejournal.ie. We want to hear from you as well, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @LateDebateRTE. Now, there was one hot topic on the agenda as the Dáil returned today, and that was turf. Let's have a listen to some of those sometimes heated exchanges, beginning with Tipperary's own Matty McGrath.
And you said earlier you thought we'd come back relaxed after the Easter. We would only if we were the Mutton Turf Show and every radio station with Minister Ryan talking about locking up grannies and locking up anybody giving back a turf to their neighbours. So we need a full debate on agriculture and the attack that's going on in rural Ireland. The Taoiseach doesn't seem to think that it's doing grand. The Taoiseach said it's like taking wine off the people in France. And then we had some expert on RT that they said that we're burning wet turf. I tell you, if you'd gotten a petrol, you couldn't burn a sort of wet turf. So you're in a different planet. So we need a debate on agriculture and all things rural that's going on here.
I thought the aromatic flavour of wine was more berry-like, and whiskey was more peat, you know.
He will be laughing when you'll be catching.
I think you all need to relax a bit.
When you will be laughing.
You're drinking too much green tea.
As I said,
you're drinking too much green tea.
Come down to Kerry and see will they laugh.
The issue
when
will
they
be
see
that the turf will not be, people will not be stopped from using their own turf. I don't know how many times I have to say it in the House. It disappoints you that I say it because you want to believe that there will be. It's a great campaign. It's fantastic. Keep running it on, lads. Keep jumping up. Let's tell the people of rural Ireland you're being deprived, you'll have nothing, you've been destroyed. It's a great line.
Indeed, keep drinking the green tea. That was a selection of voices from the Dáil on that turf issue today. Christina, after today, and we understand there was some engagement between government parliamentary party members and Eamon Ryan as well as the day wore on this. Are we any the wiser now as to where we're going to land with this turf proposal?
Not particularly. Eamon Ryan met with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael TDs this afternoon, where there was heated and frank discussions, I'm told, where it was spelt out very clearly to Eamon Ryan the position of a lot of the rural TDs. And Eamon Ryan was told that the government stability was in jeopardy over this turf issue. But coming out of the meeting, there didn't seem to be any firm proposals as to where we might go. A spokesperson did tell reporters at the cabinet briefing today that it was still the position that these regulations would be coming in some form from the 1st of September.
Sorry, a spokesperson for the government or for Eamon Ryan?
For Eamon Ryan. That the intention was to still have some sort of regulations come in from September 1st, but that it was very much, a progressive meeting that he had, and it was a listening exercise and all. So where it lands in terms of satisfying the rural TDs and where they wanted the issue for some, particularly Barry Cowan, was around that 500 mark of population.
This is the idea that you'd be able to burn your own turf if you cut it yourself, and the sale of turf would be allowed in villages, say, people with places with up to 500 people living there.
Yeah, but the argument there, I suppose it's very difficult to maybe draw those lines, or that there was boundaries about where exactly you're talking about. Some suggesting to me this evening that, you know, a wider mark of maybe a population of 5,000 would be something that might satisfy them. But it doesn't seem to be any clearer. We're told that proposals will go at some point in the next few weeks. So I think this is definitely something that will be rumbling on. It definitely was back with a bang, I think, after the Easter break anyway.
Absolutely. And do we know, did the backbenchers go into those meetings with Eamon Ryan today with a figure, with some kind of a plan, or are they just waiting for Eamon Ryan to come up with?
They very much wanted a voice, I think, that they think the timing is all bad with this in terms of at the meeting. I understand they were talking about a possibility of fivefold increases in gas prices and electricity prices before winter. So I suppose their counter argument is, why would you take away a fuel source that some people use in those circumstances? But it very much didn't seem to be that there was any core, I suppose, asks for it, other that they wanted it either to be pushed back or some sort of tinkering around the lines that would make it, I think, palatable for them to go back to their constituencies, be it, you know, obviously we know that they're allowed cut it if they have their own turbary rights, but the issue of the commercial sale, I'd say Michael Fitzmaurice probably has a lot to say on that aspect and how exactly that works, because I think a lot of people maybe are, you know, who don't have that, aren't in those areas, perhaps are a bit confused about what exactly we're talking about here. Then throughout the day was also we've had some mention of, you know, peat briquettes and things. You know, that's another issue on the sidelines, but one that will be coming down the line in 2024, that there'll be an outright ban on those sales in petrol stations and all the rest. So definitely, if not for the next few weeks, months and into the next few years, we'll definitely be talking about the burning of fuels and how we're going to do this just transition that we've been hearing very much a lot about over the last number of years, but other people are just not seeing come to fruition.
Okay, let me put this to James O'Connor. Were you at that meeting with Eamon Ryan today?
Personally, I wasn't present at that meeting in particular, but I have been discussing that with a number of colleagues who were in the room this evening with Minister Ryan. I have at multiple occasions discussed the issue of rising energy costs with him, particularly when it comes to turf cutting. This is an enormous issue for many of my colleagues right around the country and myself, particularly as well to Barry Cowan, the TD for Offaly and Laois. And I think he's done enormous work within our parliamentary party to bring Minister Ryan to the table to have a frank discussion regarding the parliamentary party's concerns or backbenchers' concerns around rising energy costs, but particularly pertaining to the cutting of turf. You know, we are looking.
So, what did Eamon Ryan tell you today, or tell your colleagues today?
Well, from my understanding, there was a very frank exchange of views, more so a listening exercise for Minister Ryan versus him having, I suppose, an extensive discussion regarding what his own intentions are. What we do know that this is still under consideration. We are looking at a number of different areas in which this could be adapted. You know, what we have heard there from Christina was there was particular reference around the cap of 500. I believe as a backbench TD, as a rural TD from Cork East, that proposal, particularly Katie, is unworkable. You know, we often hear about prescriptive legislation and how it can have unintended consequences. But when you look across rural Ireland, you know, it's very hard to see how this will be policed, and also the determining factors around local areas and, you know, where it would be suited and other areas where it wouldn't.
Yeah,
so that,
I mean,
to me is quite important.
But where do you he's being told that this is a rural tradition, and some people are relying on this obviously to heat their own homes. And the compromise is being put out there is that, okay, we won't sell it in large amounts to large urban areas, but we'll still allow it in smaller amounts, but somebody has to call the cap then. There has to be a threshold somewhere, surely. I mean, if you say 5,000, sure, you might as well just give up the ghost then and walk away from it. There's no ban.
But you know, something Deputy Cowan has said both today and on other occasions, and many other colleagues of mine will admit this, I think Michael Ring was very strong on this particular issue, it is a diminishing practice. You know, in the times ahead, we will see a reduction in the amount of turf that's been burned in homes. But we do have to acknowledge, when you look at perhaps 2/3 of social housing in Ireland, that it is the accepted practice that solid fuel burning within those homes is one of the primary methods of which houses are heated. You know, my own house at home, we have a fireplace, it's something we cherish. Getting coal is particularly popular in peat briquettes. Where I'm living in East Cork, we wouldn't have much turf cutting per se, but that is a very, very much fundamental part of how rural dwellers and people across rural towns in Ireland heat their own homes. So it's difficult for me to see how the 500 cap and other caps may be introduced. And I just think we have to acknowledge we're in a situation now where there is a major war going on.
So are you saying that really, realistically, forget about caps, just let the thing diminish naturally, go die a natural death. Is that really what you're calling for?
Personally, I think my own view is that given the circumstances we are in, we have seen enormous increases in the price of energy, in oil, in gas, which has had knock-on consequences in other areas, and people really are feeling the pinch. I'm hearing this every day in my own
but
constituency
sure, even
office.
If we weren't in the cost of living crisis, we'd still be having this row over turf, wouldn't we?
I think we
We've been having this row for 30 years.
And you were right in what you're saying, but what we didn't have 30 years ago, you know, is the situation we're in, where we've seen an exponential rise nearly in the cost of energy, and that's something that's hugely concerning.
Okay, Michael, you're smiling, smirking, it almost looks like from here.
Well, first thing is that I was in the Dáil this evening for the motion that Sarah's party had in Sinn Féin. And it was damnable to listen to all the experts that was on turf who were mining it at one stage, however we decided to do that. But the solutions to this case, we're making something awful complicated. I was brought up in the bog and proud of where I come from. And we've gone down a road of confusing something that's very easy to solve. James is 100% right. I've always said in 10 to 12 years, the generation that use turf at the moment, because all the new...
But sorry, isn't this a problem? This is not a problem about turf. I don't think anybody was going out gunning for people who were burning turf. The difficulty was, as you well know, Michael, this was about smoky coal and the other fuels and an attempt to ban those, and there was going to be a challenge
then in terms of differentiating between... I think that's the red herring, to be quite frank about it, about the smoky coal and the challenge about it. A minister can bring in, or he can put an act to the Oireachtas through, to ban smoky coal if he wants, and if he gets the support in the Dáil.
You know the legal advice that's been cited over many years now.
Does be wrong many a time. Second of all, there's ways...
So, sorry, are you saying they deliberately set out to upset country people who are trying to burn a bit of turf?
The reality of it is, you look at what has happened in Longford West Meath area with Mill and Pete. What has Eamon Ryan done for it? I sit in the Agricultural Committee, and there's three ministers involved in basically this report that was being done on Mill and Pete, which is not turf, so let's not get complicated on this. But you had Charlie McGonagall, you had Malcolm Noonan, and you had Eamon Ryan. And we got a letter from Charlie McGonagall to say that if the other two came in, he'd come in. We had a letter from Ryan to say that he wouldn't come in, and we had a letter from Noonan to say that he'd come in, but he'd only covered the bit he was. So that meant that there was no commitment. They wanted to get rid of Mill and Pete. And in my opinion, they have tried to attack us before in the bogs, as you covered many a time, Katie, in 2010, 2011, when we had to go out and defend our private property, which we done, and successfully done. And they came to the table. And in fairness, the National Parks have sat down with us and they talked to us. There's a simple solution to this. If I have a briquette there and I have a set of turf there, both are made up of the same compound. They're the same thing. They come from basically peat. And they're telling us, next after September, you can burn the briquette, but you can't burn the set of turf. I've done tests over the last 2 weeks. I got a guy to do it, a mechanical engineer, on the moisture content. And it's about, you know, when you talked about the particular matters and all that, it's about the moisture content. And the moisture content of timber at the moment is acceptable at 25%. That was to come down to 20, but my understanding is that's scrapped. The moisture content of turf can be brought down to that. And what we should do is work with the industry over a few year period to make sure that the moisture content...
Pardon? How would you do that?
Well, isn't this simple.
The nirvana of turf every summer? Yeah, who gets the good, the black turf, the dry turf?
No, but dry turf is, first of all, you turn it and you stook it and you stack it and you bring it home.
But you could do all of that and still end up with
Wait one second. When you put in turf, we tested turf that went into a shed last June or last July, and it was 8 or 9 months old. It's like timber. When you cut timber in February, and you don't burn
it.
Turn the following back in. Correct. And there's a simple solution.
Okay.
But
are you rejecting the health? This, because this was presented to us as a health measure.
If you read any of the health report, I'm not rejecting anything. If you read the reports that was done, and I've read three different reports. First of all, last them was done in Asia. Second of all, it was the WHO that done them. Second of all, in all of the places that they done. Hold on one second. It was coal. But thirdly.
My,
When they talk about it.
Yeah, but wait 1 second.
Let me finish. Burning anything releases particulate into the air, which can be damaging. Let me finish. Watch the line they use. When you burn waste timber or smoky coal or wet turf, who in their right mind will go burning wet timber or wet turf? Jeez, that day has gone a long time ago.
But when you burn anything, you release particulate matter into the air. That's a physical fact, it is acceptable at the moment.
When it is acceptable at the moment, when you bring timber down under 25% moisture, that you reduce it because the quality of burning is a way better.
Okay, Circa, you've been very patient.
I have, haven't I?
You have, indeed. It isn't like you. Sinn Féin had a motion being debated this evening. Just explain to us what was in that motion.
Okay, so what the motion entailed was the wider cost of living increases, that particularly around fuel, and how turf actually fits into that almost jigsaw of the increases that's been inflicted across rural Ireland. And Michael is actually correct when he said this: the solutions to this is actually quite simple. Yes, it's a conversation that we've been having for decades at this point. And I remember back the 10, 12 years ago when there was the whole issue around turbidry rights and so on and so forth on the bogs. Nobody disputes the fact that we need to have good air quality. I say that as somebody who is asthmatic. I know what it's like to be in a city centre surrounded by diesel trucks, and it's not somewhere that's very pleasant to be. However, in my opinion, what's happening here is that the government are essentially misleading those who aren't overly familiar with the issue of turf and making a connection to air quality that doesn't really stand up to scrutiny. Nobody disputes the fact that smoky coal has a profound impact. And the reason, in my opinion, why they're doing that and why this very heavy-handed tactic has come in is because essentially we don't know the amount of people who rely on turf as their only source of central heating. The figures simply don't exist. We have an idea that it's around 4%. It would increase to 9% in very rural areas. And if you cast your mind back to 2016, there was a strategy to combat energy poverty. And as part of that, there was meant to be an energy poverty advisory group established. That never happened. That would have been a very critical step. And it would have given us that very broad range of data outside of those. And the Taoiseach is great for coming
back. Can I ask, do you accept a couple of things? Do you accept that there is a public health rationale for curtailing the burning?
Yes, I do, without a shadow of a doubt. However, there is a way and a means of doing it that is more fair.
Do you accept that there is, and I'm not trying to make the government's case, but do you accept that there is, this is a complicated issue because they have, the government has over many years been grappling with this legal advice that if they want to ban the smoky coal, that they have to make provisions for these other solid
fuels. I think
fuels.
It's become a very complicated issue because it has been allowed to become a very complicated issue. That's the reality of it. Now, the Taoiseach is great for throwing out these statements.
So you don't accept that legal advice exists and that they need to be careful about it?
Well, absolutely, I didn't say that. However, legal advice from one day to another can change, and we know that, and we've seen that in the past. However, this is the point that I want to make. The Taoiseach is great at throwing out figures around those who are in receipt of fuel allowance. Those who are in receipt of fuel allowance is not the same number as those who are living in energy poverty. Now, if you take constituencies like mine in Longford West Meath, where there is a sizable amount of households who rely solely on turf, if those individuals were to go and retrofit their home, you're looking at needing a substantial amount of capital investment to do that, which simply isn't available. If they were lucky enough to qualify for the likes of the Warmer Home Scheme, you're then looking at a number of years before that would go from application to actually be completed. Now, what happened last year is that the underspend that the government had in that retrofitting programme, instead of being targeted into areas that rely solely on the likes of turf, they actually ended up going back into EV and solar panel grants. So going back to people who have access to finance to be able to reduce their dependency on non-renewable sources
of
energy.
What solution would Sinn Féin put forward? This motion this evening talked about a temporary ban, I think we're talking about.
This just needs to stop. Until we get to a point in time where there is a reasonable expectation that houses can be brought up to a certain standard through retrofitting or whatever else that needs to be, you cannot deny people access to the only source of fuel that they have to heat their homes. Now, and I said this in the Dáil this afternoon, I am seeing an increase in the number of people who
are
already...
So are you saying what James is saying effectively, that we just let this thing, what I think what you're saying as well, Michael, is just let this, what will become... will naturally dwindle in terms of people's reliance on turf. Mm. Are you saying there should be no interference in this in any shape or form?
But you cannot expect people who have no alternative, Katie, none, no alternative whatsoever, to heat their homes to say, you know what, I'm all right with this, we'll just ban the outdoor foot there and we'll freeze over winter. What that will actually do is compound energy poverty and will actually lead to people becoming very sick. It'll lead to further increases in the winter debt figures that we see every year. And because we don't have those cold, hard data figures that could have been provided back as far as 2016, what we see from government is this scattergun approach almost in terms of support that's been put out there. I know my own ESB account was credited with €200. I'm a TD. I earn a TD's wages, mine all the pay rises that we've gotten since
Well, we know. We've
I
had
don't
that
need
debate
it.
Many times
I would
over,
have preferred
sorry,
that to go to people who actually need it in a more targeted approach, but that couldn't happen because we don't have
I want to bring in Christina. Mm-hmm. How serious is this? You know, because it's sort of been going around the houses for so long now, but Minister Ryan does appear to be intent on proceeding with some regulation of some shape or form. Is government stability seriously possibly on the block here?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because you have a number of TDs coming out saying, well, like if you look at the Dáil arithmetic, a solution needs to be found for this fairly swiftly. You know, I was told that Eamon Ryan was fairly rattled, I think, by some of the TDs that were, you know, putting forward that argument that this was very much a red line issue for them. But I think perhaps it is something that has been mounting for some time in terms of tensions between the Green Party initiatives coming at a very difficult time, I presume, for all political parties in terms of the cost of living, for all government parties and how they're trying to navigate that. It does very much seem to be down to timing that is an issue for most of the TDs.
Is it just saber-rattling now, though, really? I mean, nobody's going to defy the whip tomorrow and vote with the Sinn Féin motion.
No, because I think, to be honest, I think the Sinn Féin motion missed a beat there, because if they had have just put down a straight, this is to do with the turf ban, it would have very much put a lot more pressure on those backbencher TDs that have been speaking out so much over the last number of weeks. If it was very much didn't include things like, as you mentioned, the cost of living things, the carbon tax, because now the backbenchers can point to why exactly they're not going to support a Sinn Féin motion. That pressure isn't on them, when actually, you know, if it had just been a straight turf ban or regulation on turf, the pressure would have definitely been mounting on the backbencher TDs to, you know, put their money where their mouth is in terms of what they've been saying.
Let's just ask James to put his money where his mouth is. What are you going to do when this goes to a vote tomorrow night?
Look, first and foremost, we'll consider what's before us, and obviously the government will not be supporting the Sinn Féin motion. I would expect that we'll see a comprehensive counter-motion prepared for us tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that, following on from the dialogue that was had today. And it's healthy that there is discussion.
Should we be looking
parties.
Out to see the wording of that counter-motion tomorrow?
Will there
be hints in that of what might be coming?
Well, I think from the perspective of the work that has been done by backbenchers within Fianna Fáil, and also look to acknowledge the work that's been done within Fine Gael as well, there has been much discourse around worries that we've had around.
I have to say, it is quite amusing to see the race between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil backbenchers to own the opposition to their own government regulation.
I certainly wouldn't accept that. Like, I just think bringing this all back to perspective, this issue, although it may appear to be small, it has touched a nerve with a lot of people. And it's in the wider context of where we've seen a dramatic increase in energy prices, which is impacting every walk of life for those in business, for homeowners, and for ordinary members of society. So I can understand why it's taking up as much political space, while there are so many other very serious issues going on around the world and domestically. But it is, you know, it is proper and right that we do have conversation about the issue. I personally feel, you know, now is not the time to be looking at ways of I suppose, curtailing the supply of energy supply to homes, given the price increases we've seen on the international markets. Okay. And hopefully they'll relax later in the year.
And I think that the counter-motion
the
counter-motion that is being put forward is kind of probably going to fudge the issue in terms of, as far as I know,
it too much, Christina. I read it this
have you seen the counter-motion?
Well, actually, John Campbell read it to me this evening. that it recognises the turbid rate. And this just shows the lack of knowledge of whoever is writing this. There's 10 different ways you can own a bog. Turbid rate is only one of them. There, what about the people that go every year and gets a plot of turf off someone down the road? They don't have a turbary right. So how are they going? What about the people that give up?
They sublet a turbary right.
Yeah, they don't sublet it. Like it's renting, to put it simple.
Well, what else is it except subletting?
Yeah, and what about the people that give up their... And listen to this carefully. They give up their bogs because of designation and the state supplies them with turf at the moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, this is since the
designation.
Yeah.
Also, the people that took compensation were asked to buy turf somewhere else. But if you read what's in front of us tomorrow night in the counter motion, it is what it states is that it respects the rights of turbary right, the usual palaver that comes out, but then that the new regulations basically will be stopping the sale of commercial turf to That's what it says. That's to put it simple.
So essentially, if somebody makes 1 cent over what it costs them to cut that turf, that's therefore commercial.
Yeah. And like that's written on the the document tomorrow night.
So you can only transfer turf at cost.
What I can't understand over the last week or two is that...
Can I ask you one thing? What the actual commercial sale, because you used to be a contractor, didn't you?
But this is where...
Are you not still in that business?
But yeah, I am, yeah. But
you are.
I was
okay,
in the
so you
this
are,
morning.
You are one of those. You are one of those commercial contractors.
Hold on. What a contractor is, just this is where the... And Sirica is right. There's an awful lot of misunderstanding. I am the person that goes in to Johnny and Mary and Tommy that has three different bogs with my machine, and they'll say these are so big machines. Well, Jesus, if they're going into a bog, they have to be fairly big because the tracks has to be widened because they're softer. And you cut for them people their little plot, right?
Okay. I'm well aware of what a turf contractor does, Michael. I'm saying you'll be out of business if they completely out of business.
Well,
we'd be cutting
for the people that it own their turbary, right? We don't be in where I'd be cutting, it's all domestic turf cutting, right? There are parts of the country that there's larger where they sell turf, and there's parts where people take plots in different parts of the country, and they would be affected in a big way, to put it very simple. But in the west of Ireland, in most of the west of Ireland, to be quite frank about it, the bogs are small, they're 1 acre plots, and the people cut enough. But here's the problem, that those people, if they give it to their son and daughter, they don't have a turbary right, so they'd be illegal. That's the problem.
Under what we are now told were draft regulations as laid out in that PQ, and we're now told that's not what's going to end up in the regulations. Ultimately, but as you say, God knows what's going to end up in those regulations at this stage.
Of when you put in a regulation, and James has highlighted earlier on, the unforeseen consequences that can come with that regulation. There's a simple solution out of it, in my opinion. He needs to grasp that nettle the way that he'll take something out of it, because I'll tell you, if he keeps going down the road, he's going down. He's on a road to nowhere. And people, above all things, they're infuriated for the simple reason, Katie. There's 7,000 tonnes of coal going through Moneypint today. There's 6 Arctic loads of diesel getting generators going. And we have to do some of these things to keep the lights on. But the people, like I'd be talking to them every day in Boggs, and they will tell you, they feel as if they're being picked on, that they're being bullied, that they're the small fry, and that they're being bullied compared with what's going on in the bigger scale.
Okay, just a couple of texts in there. This is after our initial playing of what happened in the Dáil today. Katie, please tell me that was Callan's kicks. another texter says, we've had 3 decades to sort out a 19th century fuel supply issue. And then we have an email from a listener saying, with the challenges we are facing in terms of world peace, refugees and the increased cost of living, we spend our time talking about turf. Well, turf is one of the cost of living issues for a lot of people, an energy issue as well. But it is time to move on. I want to move on to the issue of refugees. Because, of course, today the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, has said that 89 buildings have been identified for accommodating Ukrainian refugees. This is following a trawl of local authorities' vacant properties. We're also hearing that we are now moving to introduce modular homes. And we have a brand new cabinet subcommittee, which will now oversee this accommodation issue for the refugees. Okay, where do we go with this? First of all, James, the modular homes issue, which is back on the agenda. It's only 4 weeks ago since the Taoiseach told us, don't be thinking about modular homes. Should we, you know, that we tried that before and that wasn't the great, you know, answer to our prayers that we thought it was. Is this just panic talk now?
I suppose, look, reflecting on the situation, what has occurred in Ukraine is absolutely appalling. And look, I'm not going to dwell on it too much because I think everybody out there is aware of it.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that one, yeah.
What we need to realise is that there's been over 2 million people who have already fled Ukraine, and that number is increasing. You know, it's very hard to get a real, true and accurate picture of how many people have left Ukraine. But that is absolutely disturbing in terms of what's going on within the country.
Yeah, we have 25,173 Ukrainian refugees in Ireland, as far as we know, as of now.
Yes, and
you could address the question, though, in terms of the modular housing, because I'm looking back. I thought of when I heard it today, I said, did I imagine what the Taoiseach just said in recent weeks? And I went back and looked at it, and he said, this is just 4 weeks ago, that modular housing has been tried before and it's not the solution people make it out to be. He wanted to temper expectations in relation to the use of modular housing. It had proved in the past not much quicker to deliver than regular housing. I really want to dampen down the idea that somehow the state is clicking into action and people are going to see 50 or 60,000 new houses and apartments. That's not going to happen. This is going to be really difficult. So,
well, I'm certainly not trying to dispute the point you're making there, but I just think we have to be rooted in the reality we're now living in. The world has totally changed within 1 month. I think all of us accept that. And particularly when it comes to housing refugees that are coming into the country from Ukraine, we need to take unprecedented action. Look at things that have not been on the table before now. As you've said in your opening contribution, we've gone across the country trawling to try and find vacant, suitable premises, just to finish my point, Katie, and to answer the questions you've asked. Yeah. You know, 89 of these have been found already. There's extensive work going on across the country to try and find any degree of accommodation that's going to be suitable to bring in refugees into the country. We also need to acknowledge as well, and I certainly have felt this from my own constituency office, engaging with people on the ground, that many of the Ukrainian members of the community in Ukraine that have left, you know, they fully intend to return home to Ukraine someday. So this is a temporary measure in order to help them try and find some degree of stability for themselves and their families. It's utterly appalling what is going on out there. And we just need to do our level best for a number of years, and hopefully the conflict will not last that long.
All of these things are completely, I don't think a single person listening or in the studio is going to disagree with any of those sentiments, James O'Connor. What I'm saying is that, is it realistic to suggest that something we were told 4 weeks ago is not a solution is suddenly now a major part of our solution?
I think it would be incorrect, though, for us to use the situation as perhaps a battering ram on government housing policy. We just have to accept that we're living in a situation where there is a huge shortage of supply of housing in the country. Government is doing enormous work in this regard with 20 billion euros that has been assigned for the construction of new houses. But Katie, this can't happen overnight. This will take a number of years to address, and it's incredibly complicated. So what we do need to look at is other alternatives, some of which have been off the table. And this is something that's going to be done on an ongoing basis. And in the next number of weeks, we will see an increased number of people entering into the country. And this is going to, and I just want to make this point, this is going to be difficult. It's been very, very difficult for local communities, you know, that have been trying to find and source emergency accommodation. Also, what we're starting to see now emerge in the last number of days is there's a pattern of, I suppose, those that have been involved in direct provision purchasing hotels around the country. And this has been quite controversial as well. So my message to government, and as a government TD, but I do think we need to be very, very careful in managing the inbound, migration of people from Ukraine, and making sure that we are doing it in a sensible manner, taking our time to make sure that it is done properly. And modular accommodation, unfortunately, it must happen in order for us to give suitable accommodation for the many young children, for the families that have escaped this conflict, and also being cognizant of the fact, and many people I've engaged with since they have come to Ireland, they want to return.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Ken.
Okay, the one thing that needs to happen here is that government need to start being very, very honest with people. Before Ukrainian refugees started coming to our shores, and we all know the trauma and the suffering that they have gone through, the government's housing plan was failing, and it was failing miserably. Like, the first quarter of 2022 progress report didn't even have a press conference because of how little progress had actually been made in it. That's the reality, okay? But what we do not need to happen here is that we end up in a situation where Ukrainian refugees are in competition with others who are in acute housing need for a very limited supply of social and private rental accommodation.
Can I just touch on the modular issue?
Okay, there's an area in my constituency called Lissy Woolen. Most people would be familiar with it. I know Michael probably is because it's just very close to him as well. It's in Athlone. Modular homes, mobile homes. It's been a direct provision centre now for years. Let's have a look at where we've used modular anything beforehand, and that would be in our school system, and let's see how well that worked out. We do not need to be repeating failed experiments of the past, and we do not need it to be inflicted on people who are fleeing wars. The reality is there's about 60,000 holiday homes.
So are you saying you don't think
state.
Modular homes is a good idea?
In modular homes for a very set period of time do have a role to play. However, I do not believe that this government would actually deliver on that. What I do believe has happened is that the modular homes would be provided and 10, 15 years later we'd be looking at the same as what happened with demountable homes where floors are falling out and windows are collapsing and the places are absolutely horrendous. 60,000 holiday homes across the state. The Refugee Council has highlighted this as being a real workable, cheaper and quicker method of delivering emergency accommodation for those seeking roles as opposed to vacant buildings. How does the government get access to
those holiday homes, because they're all privately owned, obviously?
Well, that's it. Let's have a conversation with those who owns it. Let's see what it is that the cost would be to actually take them in stock for a set period of time. And James is correct when he says the vast majority of refugees that I have spoken to have come from Ukraine.
So you're saying the government should offer to lease those holiday homes?
Offer to lease them a reasonable amount of money for a set period of time. Nothing should be cast aside until it is absolutely scrutinised. But I have to be quite frank, I would be really, really frightened of giving this government control over modular homes for people who are fleeing a war situation when we know already that there is a very limited amount of council voids that are there. Before the Ukrainian refugees started to arrive, there was already the Fair Deal scheme was being put out there as a potential to bring new properties onto the market for people to private rent. And during this time, all we have seen is a massive increase in rent. A house in my constituency went up €100 overnight. Literally overnight.
For rent, a monthly €100.
And all the time, while this is happening, we have seen a massive increase in the purchasing price of houses as well. So we have a rental crisis, we have a purchasing crisis, and now on top of this, the government's grand plan is to throw in modular.
Michael, yeah, isn't this because we saw last week the what we heard was that local authorities were getting emergency powers to go into the private market and buy up more houses, which of course is going to put more pressure on an already incredibly tight housing stock coming on the market and on people who are trying to buy their first house or their second house or whatever. We're now going to throw more state money into that incredibly tight scenario.
I think one thing that everyone has to recognise, at the moment we don't know the number of Ukrainian people that will come here. We know that our housing market is under pressure. And I did notice, and I'm going to be very straight about it, I did notice when the minister talked about the voids being done up, I noticed emails coming in saying we're on housing lists for X amount of years. Is there a problem that they're forgetting us here in Ireland as well? And I think, you know, you have to balance this to keep people with you. I think an incredible effort has been made by the ordinary people right around this country. I've seen a Ukrainian family, two of them actually came, and now they're working. It's great, you know, that's great to see that. Very close to me, within a mile of me at home. And it's great to see what ordinary people and communities have done. The state still has a lot of buildings, Katie, around the country that's lying idle that would cater for a lot of people. But we can kick a government up and down the road. But in fairness, you cannot, if you don't know what's coming, and we don't know what's coming,
how can you
and plan? We're trying to cater for the housing pressure that's here at the moment, it's going to be serious pressure. And you're not going to magic up houses overnight. Let no one go thinking they're going to put them together overnight. This is going to get tough going if the numbers keep continuing at the rate they're at.
Can I make a supplementary point there?
Okay, I'll let you back in. I just let Christina, because she hasn't been in for a little while. Yes, Christina, and I'll let you back in.
Yeah, I think the interesting point there on the figures coming in on how many Ukrainian refugees, actually there's been a significant reduction in the number of people arriving in the last 2 weeks. We were told today that, you know, while we were up at around 500, 600 people per day over the last number of weeks, it was only 130 people arrived yesterday, and it was between 150 to 200 over the last couple of days. So government, as you said, it's hard to predict what they're facing. And they don't, you know, obviously the smaller numbers perhaps is, you know, you're talking about housing and the pressure that might be there. But yeah, it's difficult to gauge what situation they're going to be in. Just 2 points, I suppose, on the modular housing thing. I think everyone remembers Owen Murphy, I think, first floated the idea when he was housing minister about the rapid builds, and this was going to be our great solution to the housing crisis that's still ongoing. But basically, it was the objections that ultimately stopped that. There was great plans to have these prefabricated homes that are, you know, made in factories, and I think everyone's sort of seen those great videos on Facebook that get shared about why can't we do this, and they're from the Netherlands where they just throw up a frame of a house and it's up in a day or two. But it came down ultimately to objections to the planning permission. Today we were told that if we were going to do that modular housing, modular homes plan, there's going to be a pilot project first. So I think you're talking about a while off. I think they're very aware. They didn't release the location or any sort of floated county about where this pilot project might be, maybe because of that exact reason that happened all those years ago about the objections to it. And just on the issue of voids, I think, you know, that's been something that's been talked about, and it is in the Housing for All plan, but there just wasn't, you know, the immediacy there for it. And I think it is frustrating for people when we were talking even about the vacant tax way back before the budget, and that was kicked to touch by Pascal Donoghue, saying we had to wait for the local property tax returns to ascertain how many vacant properties we had in the country. Yeah. And now we're seeing, you know, urgency to get those vacant properties back into use when, you know, the urgency wasn't there when we weren't facing this crisis, when it very much should have been.
Indeed. And I just, before I let you back in, James, just a tweet here from Peter Dooley saying, Dara O'Brien says 89 state-owned buildings can be used immediately for 5,300 Ukrainian refugees. Last year, 115 people died on the streets of Dublin. It's obvious that their lives did not necessitate any emergency government response.
I wouldn't agree entirely with the comments that have been made there. I think government has been really proactive on the issue of homelessness, and unfortunately...
But have we been proactive on the issue of vacant homes? Absolutely. Can you honestly, hand on heart, say that we have gone as fast as we could, as proactively
Katie,
as we
could,
in relation to those?
If you drive across rural Ireland, constituencies like my own and right across the countryside, throughout COVID-19, people have really looked towards, you know, vacant properties and looked for opportunities investing in the renovation of vacant properties as well.
Private individuals who are looking for a home of their own heads. I'm saying, has the government actually put policies in place to ensure that these properties are coming back into use?
Just let me make the point. If you drive right across the country, you are going to see an enormous amount of vacant property that has been renovated, been brought back to a standard that people can live in again. As somebody who aspires to buy a home, I live with my parents, like so many people in their 20s in this country. I do think we need to do more work, particularly in our inner cities and in our towns, and the conversion of commercial premises. But if you look at what government has been doing over the last 12 months, there has been a lot of progress made in this particular area. Now, the point I wanted to make, Katie, I promise you'd let me back in. I just want to wholeheartedly agree with a point Michael made, and it's extremely important. Over the last week and a half, I've seen an enormous shift, I think, in public opinion. I'm seeing emails coming into our office, people worried about their ability to access the social welfare system in Ireland, social housing as well. I think that's something we need to be very mindful
these
of.
These are people afraid that the sense that Ukrainian refugees are jumping the queue ahead of them, and that
one
they,
point
they
I want
will
to stress
be,
this point, because in my own constituency this is happening. We are seeing now private operators of direct provision and emergency accommodation that are purchasing hotels for usage with multiple hundreds of refugees being given accommodation. And I think that's something that we need to be quite careful, because I want to see in all circumstances that any person arriving into the state is given all of the supports that they need, that their children are given access
to
education.
Why are you concerned about private operators purchasing hotels?
Because I think this is a humanitarian situation. It's something that I think
that
we need to realise.
You think people should not be making money out of it?
Exactly. You know, I think that's something I personally believe in. I think that's a very important
point.
But
do we not
make.
Need people who have offering hotels for these
We
for
do,
refugees?
But the point I'm making is the purchasing, that there's companies that are purchasing hotels.
So it's okay to hand over millions every year for homeless accommodations to B&B and hotel, but it's not okay for somebody to go and buy a hotel to do that.
The question that needs to be really asked here now is utterly misrepresenting the point that I was making. And if Sinn Féin were serious, they would go into...
Okay, no, one voice, please, sir. One voice, please.
Yeah, and I was...
Just finish that point very quickly.
With absolute courtesy, Saoirse, I haven't interrupted one thing you have said despite disagreeing with much of what you've said. But that's one point that I just do want to make, that we have to be careful, that, you know, I'm seeing it in my own constituency.
You're not honestly suggesting we stop somebody from making a perfectly legal purchase of a property.
But no, what I'm suggesting is that we need to put safeguards in place for refugees that are coming in to ensure that their children will have access to school systems, that you won't have large-scale accommodation being provided well into the hundreds, approaching 1,000 in one case has been brought to my attention.
Okay. Can I ask one thing before we move on from this? The Cabinet subcommittee that was created today, I just noticed, so we have the three coalition leaders, Minister for Housing, Minister for Children, Minister for Foreign Affairs. Given that this is a crisis, almost all of those 25,173 people are women and children. Mm-hmm. And there isn't a single woman on the Cabinet subcommittee. Is that not an oversight to begin with? Again, we're back to all the discussions we had around the NEFIT and the Cabinet subcommittee on that. Has it occurred to anyone that we maybe should have...
It could be a reflection, Katie, of the actual makeup of Cabinet.
But we have an education minister who's a woman.
Yeah.
We have a justice minister who's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a disabilities.
We have a disabilities. As a woman. Yeah. Yet it's all the boys here who seem to be making these decisions. But social protection. We have a social protection minister who is a woman who's not on this cabinet subcommittee.
I think if there was a genuine and concerted effort to have a cross departmental committee to look at the needs of Ukrainians and other refugees who are coming into the country, then what you need to have is a broad representation of each of the major departments. Now, you've called out a few of them there, but of the Ukrainians that I have spoken to, one of the biggest concerns that they have said to me is actually access and GPs. So where's the health representative on that? In terms of social protection, I haven't come across one Ukrainian refugee who's had issues in access and social protection. In fairness, I haven't. But they have had issues in terms of access and schools. So as you said, where's the Minister for Education in this conversation? I think the theory behind a cross-departmental subcommittee is probably actually has quite a bit of merit that's there. There needs to be better communication between the departments. What we don't need to see happening, and this is what's happening at the moment, people will come, they
I'm
will
just
be
watching
processed.
The time, yeah. Erica, so
I'll be very brief. Yeah. But the supports that are provided, the social welfare supports, the PPSN, that's essentially it. Where the rest of the needs are being met is actually through the voluntary and the community sectors. So what additional supports do they need? I mean, very basic things. I had a group of ladies come into my office one day looking for information on sports and recreational clubs for their children. Who provides that information?
Yeah, OK.
Sorry,
Christy, I'm going to move on because I need to take a break and I need to move on to the next issue. Just one last text here. I hope the Ukrainians receive no further hostility. It's such a shame to see battles for housing. Mm-hmm. The government has shown what it could have done all along. So unfortunate it took world events to look closer at what's available. We'll take a break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the chair of the Oireachtas Finance Committee, John McGuinness, has written to the Secretary General of the Department of Health, that's Robert Watt, to convey his disappointment at the lack of response from Robert Watt to an invitation to appear at a meeting of that committee tomorrow. Meanwhile, the Oireachtas Committee on Health is to invite Stephen Donnelly, Robert Watt and Dr Tony Whelan before it to discuss the Chief Medical Officer's aborted move to Trinity College. The committee met in private session today and agreed to offer two potential dates for the three men to appear, one next week and another the week after. However, Minister Donnelly has already stated that he won't appear before any committee until an external review into the episode is completed. Christina, this is quite the saga.
Yeah, a bit of a mess, really. And it comes down to, I think Catherine Murphy kind of said it really well in the Dáil, that now we've moved into the aspect of, you know, who's in charge here, who's snubbing committees, and, you know, what's the point of having an Oireachtas committee if you can't actually get ministers and civil servants to appear before it. You know, the Taoiseach said that the health minister had no problem appearing before an Oireachtas committee, and that that external review of the appointment is going to be, you know, out fairly shortly. He seemed to indicate that it wouldn't be taking that long. So yeah, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere, you know, quick. But I do think it does come down to now at this point is, you know, you have to have those committees there to hold people to account and to get answers. And, you know, the Finance Committee is delving into, you know, what the public money is being spent on. That's kind of a very different sort of angle, perhaps, to some of the other aspects of this controversy. You know, I think they have a right to be asking some of those questions. And the fact that it's kind of like pulling teeth to get people just even to respond, it really doesn't look great, you know, when they're trying to convince other people from, you know, state agencies. Like, we've all seen, you know, the likes of the National Children's Hospital and, you know, controversies where perhaps those people, I'm sure, do not want to be coming in and answering questions that, you know, if they can point and say, well, sure, the minister didn't bother to come before you, so why should I? It really does leave a bad taste, I think, in the whole thing of in terms of accountability.
Yeah. James, it does it not put into question the work of all Oireachtas committees? Because, I mean, they depend on the goodwill and the respect that they have for people to appear before them. They don't have judicial compellability. And to have ministers in some cases saying we're not going to come and then saying, well, I'll come when I decide I want to come. Is that appropriate?
I think the work that the Oireachtas committees do is obviously an incredibly important function of the work we do as parliamentarians. And I do agree when ministers are asked before committees that they should attend. My understanding is that Minister Donnelly and Mr Watt have both adapted the position that they will be amenable to go before the committees that have requested their attendance prior to the publication of the report.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's anybody has said they will definitely go before the Finance Committee.
Has
Robert Watt said he'll go before Finance?
To my understanding, I think there's been a slight change in that, but you might just check that. But I do think it is important when the request goes in. What's important to say is that if they do...
Should they then be able to dictate the timing of their appearance?
Well, I suppose it's pertaining to each individual minister's schedule, but generally Oireachtas committees are very amenable. You know, the primary
this
work
isn't
that
a scheduling
I do,
issue though, you know, this is
of course I'm not this, but that's not the question you asked. But the point I'm making to you is that I think as a TD I want to say I take the parliamentary functions that I have seriously. Other ministers and particularly very senior civil servants, in this case one of the most senior, should rely.
I'm trying to figure out, are you being critical of the stance that Robert Watt and Stephen Donnelly have taken here or not?
I'd have particular concerns around the Secretary General of the Department of Health. You know, throughout his career, and particularly in his time as SecGen in the department he's in now, there's been a few moves he's made that have been quite controversial without dwelling on any of them individually. And I think it's important for him to realise that it's important that he does go in and face questioning by members.
But not your colleague, your Fianna Fáil colleague, Stephen Donnelly.
In both cases.
You just singled out Robert Watt ahead of Stephen Donnelly there.
Certainly. I think it's very clear to see that within the HSE and the Department of Health, there is significant issues. You know, just to complement the work that's been done by
the
ministerial colleagues.
Should the minister not be front and centre in answering questions in relation to those?
Yes, and I think the senior civil servants that are answerable to those ministers and answerable to government and the state also have a role to play, and it's important to recognise that they remain on.
Skipped over Stephen Donnelly's position each time. So are you saying Stephen Donnelly?
Yes, I'm saying yes to your question.
Okay,
I just want to be
so you're critical of both of them
but
for the
more
stance
so in the case of the Secretary General. I think that's very important to make that point.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah, first of all, I think if you ever want to get to the top in Ireland, you don't go into politics, you go to the civil service, you get up the ladder and become a Secretary General, because it's very clear. I've outlined to you, Katie, a few minutes ago in our committee in agriculture, three ministers, they're playing cat and mouse with us, we're being made fools of. If there has to be powers put in that committees can compel, like the Senate in America, that you can compel someone to come in, because what's happening at the moment is that there are senior civil servants, the permanent government, I call them, and it's only some of them. There are some of them okay, in fairness, but my God, what's going on in this country? You know, if it keeps going the way it's going, I don't think anyone will go into politics, because they are untouchable and unmovable. That's the bottom line with the senior civil servants. And a minister can be kicked out the door in one vote within the Dáil, and there might be only a month in. And
but isn't that exactly why we need a permanent government, senior civil servants? Because they are not going to be swayed by the, you know, the slings and arrows to be popular.
Oh, no. If the people of a country votes for you or James or Sarah or whoever in to represent them, and they end up in government, they should be the person that makes the decisions. They need to go in and chew into every bit of nitty-gritty within in that department. But what is happening is, Minister, you're going down to Kerry, or you're going to Longford, and you're going to be cutting a tape. You're going somewhere else. They'll send you around in circles. They'll put a heap of paperwork in front of you. You'll sign off X, Y, and Z, and next thing, some bomb will come out of the blue that you've signed something that you should never have signed. And if we keep going down that road, why would you have politicians? Just tell
me
why.
We've been on this road since democracy and parliamentary government has been created.
And what needs to happen
is... Have you been watching Yes Minister?
What needs to happen is the secretary generals, the assistant principals, the assistant secretaries needs to be acting. And if they're not doing their job at any stage, you can put them back to where they were. Change that, Katie, we're going nowhere as a country.
There's an absolutely shocking level of arrogance on display here, Katie. There really is. And it isn't the first time that we have seen actions like this. The fact is that this was committed to by Robert Watt, a senior civil servant, eventually approved by DEEPER, that the Finance Committee oversees. The Finance Committee wanted the SecGen, Martin Fraser, Robert Watt and Minister Donald in, yet for some reason none of this has come about. This is not a trivial matter. This is 20 million euro of a package is what we're talking about here. 20 million euro.
Should this be a turf war to mention the turf war between Oireachtas committees? Should we not just give responsibility to one Oireachtas committee to get to the bottom of this?
No. There is an independent review which is seeking to learn more lessons for the government not to trip over its own shoelaces again in the future. What the Finance Committee wanted to know was how it actually came about at the beginning. They are not the same issue. Okay. They are very different.
And I'm told I'm looking at the clock.
Can I say one thing?
Okay, Martin Fraser apparently is appearing tomorrow before that committee.
Thing, and it was said at where there was going to be transparency. It was famously done by a sick general. The phrase was, defend, deny. Deny, defend, put off the inevitable into the very last minute. That's the attitude that we're dealing with.
Okay. On that note, that's all we have time for this evening. I want to thank my panel for coming in to me this evening. I want to thank you all for listening and tweeting and texting. Sean Marham was our broadcast coordinator. Research was by Andrew Fleming. Aisling Grufferty was on sound. And tonight's programme was produced by series producer Penny Hart. Colin Murray is on the way with Late Date. But first, I'll hand you over to Michael Corcoran on the Sports Desk.